Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast at Burnt Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burntorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content, you could find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media. You can find us at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's the Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who continues to revel in the fact that Tennessee will always be the second UT. Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Look, Tennessee's a good program, right? They have a
solid institution.
They have a really good attempt at a color, right? They're like 90% of the way there. You know, they got the orange down. Just burn it, you're good. You know, if it ain't burning, it ain't turn. They have a really good baseball team now. You know, we've been to Omaha 37 times. But there was a opinion that Tennessee was really, you know, their fans and rightful to feel so, and we might just on this very podcast talk about overall athletic programs, but their fans were so excited. They're number one right now in baseball, and they've been number one in football. They've won a national championship. They had women's basketball dominance, men's basketball. They've been number one. Softball, they've even been number one. They said, surely we must be the only school to ever have done this, but then they did the research, and they're second. The other UT beat them to it. UT had done it, which, you know, was a good chance to take a look. And UT had not only had those schools, right? They had done both men's and women's. The big three, basically, just say it. You know, go one further. Volleyball as well, right? Softball, volleyball, and women's basketball. And then obviously football, men's basketball, baseball. But they've also done it in 11 other sports. Like almost any way you want to slice it, UT has been number one in just about everything that they actually compete in. And if you stay tuned to this very podcast, you might hear some specifics about everything that they actually compete in and how that shakes out on a overall athletic program stage.
So if you're a person that turns the podcast off immediately after the opening, you're a weirdo. But also, Kyle said stay tuned. Literally the first thing we're going to do, we have a guest on today. For the first of our kind of new format Thursday, we're kind of just doing some not off-topic but not on-topic subjects, just some things that are interesting to us as people that are also tangentially related. And this one's pretty directly related to Longhorn sports. So we've got friend of the show, Brett Wilkinson on. He's going to come on and talk to us about the Director's Cup and kind of a little bit about the history of the Director's Cup and the changes. If you're not familiar with it, UT won the Director's Cup a year ago, and according to his maths, Texas might be in a solid spot heading into the close of it. So we'll talk to him. He's got a great breakdown for us. We'll obviously do our BOL, all of the pro Longhorns and all the tangential Longhorn things there, and we'll close the show out with some Godzillatron. We've always been really invested and interested in the Director's Cup, as the podcast kind of loves to give the shine to the other sports. And friend of the show, we say that jokingly a lot, but actually friend of the show, Brett Wilkinson is with us, and he's been kind of keeping us up to date on what's going on with the Director's Cup. And so we've got Brett on today to kind of walk us through. Like, he's got like math and research and spreadsheets, which is way smarter than a guy who took math for non-majors in college. But
If you have spreadsheets, you know it's real. So, Brett, welcome to the podcast, and we're glad to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. There are definitely some Excel spreadsheets involved to keep track of this, but I appreciate y'all having me. I appreciate y'all for the podcast y'all put on a weekly basis, and glad to jump on.
Well, we're glad to have you. So if you're not familiar with the Director's Cup is the annual award given to the top athletic department in the country. And there's a lot of scoring that goes into it, but Brett's done some research. And so like, if you were kind of to walk people through the Director's Cup and its significance, Brett, like just give us like a 30,000 foot view of what that would be.
There's a few different people who try to quantify, you know, which athletic department is best. And there's a few different ways that people go about that. And this is one of those ways. I think they're all flawed in one way or another. So one of the other big awards is the Capital One Cup, completely different scoring system, a lot of overlap in who's going to win it, a lot of overlap in Texas having some success. But for example, Texas will never win that contest because they favor sports that Texas does not compete in. The Director's Cup, on the other hand, Texas has an uphill battle to face, but with the across the board success that Texas has been having lately, there is a chance for Texas to win this by scoring points in up to 19 of the 20 sports that we have on campus.
And out of the 19, you know, that they're scoring, there's some mandatory across, right? Like when you talk about the different scoring systems and what they favor, what is the Director's Cup? What are the mandatories that every school is measured on?
That's right. So the mandatories, and this is only since 2017. So this was a big change. And this is what I think has helped unseat Stanford a bit. Every school has to include football, basketball, both men's and women's, and baseball.
And it's crazy you say that when, you know, UT, we've talked about is in their most down decade of football. But again, that's why we like folks, you know, listening to this podcast, having our guests on. You got to look at the full spectrum. This is the true view. Football is but a component. It's not necessarily weighted. In any sport is not weighted 1.5 versus one versus another. Is that right?
That's right. In this one, it is not. Everything across the board is weighted equally. So football is not going to contribute any points this year, but the other 19 sports on campus will potentially, and that's why Texas has a shot.
You talked about 19, but we only mentioned, you know, the four that are automatic qualifiers. So like how does the rest of the scoring work? So you get scoring for football, men's and women's, basketball, baseball, but then there's, again, 15 other sports out there. So like how is that determined? What goes into the scoring? Like I don't know as much about it as I wish I did.
Yeah, let me go back to the beginning with the initial scoring system, and then we'll talk about the change that's happened that's helped Texas out a little bit. So when this started back in 1993, basically you could score points for any 10 men's sports and 10 women's sports. There were no mandatory sports at that time. So in that first year, actually, North Carolina won. Mia Hamm won a soccer championship. They won a women's basketball championship and had success across the board. They won the very first year. Stanford went on to win first place for 25 years in a row.
Wow.
And something changed in 2017 with the scoring that made it a little bit more likely for some teams to unseat Stanford. So in 2017, that's when they changed to the 19 sports instead of 20. There used to be 10 and 10. Now there's 19. They took away any gender requirements. So it doesn't have to be men's sports or women's sports. It's just 19 sports. And that 19 number came from, that's the average number of sports on for D1 schools. Yeah. So D1, you can score 19. Now the median, talking about math for non-majors, median number of sports in D1 is actually 16. So over 50% of your D1 colleges can't even field the 19 teams that can potentially score. So some people still say 19 might be too many, but that was one of the changes that happened in 2017, which helped Texas out a little bit. Texas has 9 men's teams. Texas has 11 women's sports. So we now have 20. We need 19 of those to score. over the years, you can see on the old scoring system, when you had to have 10 men's teams, well, Texas has only ever had 9 men's sports. Yeah. So that was a disadvantage. Texas, back in 93, when it started, only had 8 women's sports. And it wasn't until we added rowing, softball, and soccer later on that we got up to the 11 women's sports we have now. So Texas has been at a disadvantage, and you compare to Stanford. Stanford has 31 sports that they can score points in. Wow. 15 men's, 16 women's teams. So their opportunities to score points, both in the old scoring system and the new, they just greatly outpace Texas in their opportunities, as do a lot of the other teams that are at the top of the rankings that we'll talk about later. So that's kind of how the scoring works. That's kind of why Stanford has done so well. And hats off to them. They have a really good athletic department, but they also have a large athletic department that favors them in this contest.
Right. And doing the quick math, right, that's well over a dozen teams that they just get to drop your lowest score, right? So if you have 19, you're scoring them all. If you have 25, you get to drop 6, if I have fingers for that one. You basically just pick your best 19. So that's where the inherent advantage comes for Stanford. So let's talk about Texas this year and the scoring. I think the initial spring rankings came out not too long ago. And so how's Texas looking?
Yeah, so after wrapping up the fall and the winter seasons, Texas sits in 5th place. So those rankings actually right now, and this is about the halfway mark in the season. There's still about half of the sports ahead of us. Overall, it's Michigan in 1st place with 761 points, Notre Dame in 2nd with 754, Ohio State, Stanford, and then Texas has 679.5 points. So they're about 90 points behind Michigan right now.
And so is there like a point value associated for each like place in the finish? Like how is that calculated?
It's kind of complicated and more complicated for this podcast for sure. Not that this is a simple podcast. It's really complicated because every sport finishes up a little bit differently. So a championship is worth 100 points. So your maximum score would be 1900 points if you win 19 national championships. 2nd place is usually 90, 3rd place is 85, but a lot of like the tournament sports, so March Madness, if you're in the round of 64, even if you lose, you just tied for 33rd.
Right.
If you make it to the round of 32, like the men's basketball team did, well, you just tied for 17th. Women's basketball, they made it to the Elite Eight, so they technically tie for fifth. So the points get very... It's different sport by sport. It depends on how big of a bracket there is. Hockey just finished. That's a 16-team tournament. So making the Sweet 16 in hockey isn't as valuable as making the Sweet 16 in basketball.
You know, that's interesting. I noticed that Texas reported certain things like that. That makes a lot of sense, where they would report, you know, a Elite Eight run as tied for fifth, and that makes a lot more sense in how they did that. It helps with some of the round numbers too, to say, you know, this many top 10 finishes, because the round of whichever 8 or 16.
Yeah, you make it to 16. That's a top 9 finish. And yeah, that's not a burn orange lenses, so to speak. That's how the Director's Cup labels it.
I love it. So what does Texas have to look forward then? We know where they sit right now, in good position, actually, because you mentioned that's fall and winter. So that's football's included in that. You know, volleyball also, obviously. But, you know, it doesn't include, Gerald and I have said on the podcast, Texas is now a spring sports school. Doesn't include a lot of sports that were currently ranked 1, 2 in tennis and rowing and some of these sports. So when we look forward, Texas currently has a pretty big advantage of other schools in Texas. I want to say, when I looked at that list, A&M is 50, TCU 51, Tech 55, Baylor 57. So there's a gap between Texas and everyone else in the state, which settles one debate. But when we look forward at what Texas has to potentially score in, I mean, give us some thoughts, give us some primo picks here, give us a little insight into what might happen.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, Texas is doing really well. You know, first off, I think you have to look at how Texas is competing with themselves from last year when they won the championship. The cross country teams, didn't score last year. Soccer didn't score last year. All of those teams had postseason finishes. So that was plus 100 points. And obviously we had great finishes with both track teams, the men's indoor championship. Volleyball disappointed by making the Elite Eight. You know, women's basketball killed it again. So Texas is actually 120 points ahead of where they were last year.
Nice.
So even though they're in fifth, this is a strong position for Texas because, yeah, the spring is strong. So coming up in the spring, Texas has the chance to win. Well, looking at the rankings, they're ranked number one in three sports. That's rowing and both of the track and field teams. They have three sports ranked in the top 10 and three sports ranked in the top 15. So when you look at the competition, those schools that we mentioned earlier, I see Notre Dame going to fade big time. They only have eight teams in the top 25. Ohio State is going to have a lot of top 25 finishes, but they're not really pushing for national championships and top 10. So you're going to be looking at a top three of Michigan and Stanford and Texas. Those are going to be the three schools really duking it out here. And, you know, Stanford's going to win some national championships. They're going to have three top 15 finishes as well, most likely. But Texas has three more teams ranked in the top 10 compared to Stanford. So I think Texas beats out Stanford. And then I think the biggest competition is actually going to be Michigan. I would not be surprised if Stanford not only, you know, fails to win, which is kind of their standard at this point after winning 25 in a row. I don't think they win it. I think they might actually fall down to third.
Hot take alert.
Michigan plays in second place.
I love it. This is what you listen to the Longhorn Republic for right here, is these absolutely scalding caliente hot takes. You heard it. Stanford is finished.
So we were talking over. He didn't just say Stanford. What was the other piece of information that Kyle and I were hearing over?
Michigan, I think, is going to land in second place.
So that means we're hearing a prediction on the podcast live on the air. You're predicting, you know, like election night in America, these are never wrong. You're predicting Texas to defend the title and keep the cup in its rightful home of Austin.
Stop the count. Texas is going to be the champion.
Brett, if you called this on the podcast, we're going to start our calling our football predictions Podstradamus. Brought to you by Brett Wilkinson. We're gonna name Podstradamus after you if you called it here on this podcast.
As long as there's no financial contribution, yeah. Texas, Michigan, Stanford.
I love it. So Brett, you do regular updates on this. So like, if folks want to follow along with that, like, where can they find that on the internet?
Yeah, I spend some time on Horn Sports. I think y'all mentioned being friends with Aaron Carrera over there.
Yeah.
It's
great, dude.
A discussion I have over there. It's called the Director's Cup thread. You can check in there. There's not a lot coming because this comes in waves, right? So you got to wait for championship season. So hockey finished up. I actually paid attention to the men's hockey. Michigan was the favorite. University of Denver rise up, knocked them out in the Final Four.
All right.
And you know what? I'm going to pay more attention to the men's and women's gymnastics competitions than I thought I might. But other than that, there's no championships for a while. So a little bit of a dead period as Texas progresses through these spring seasons. And then obviously things are really going to heat up near the end of the semester.
I really hope Texas makes it easy for you by just winning both track and field, rowing, both tennises, and let's call it baseball. Just make it real without a doubt, you know, five to six more national championships coming, you know, makes your job easy.
Yeah, we'll have to see, you know, if we can follow the Golf U thread here. Big win by Scotty. And, you know, I know y'all mentioned the Cootie brothers getting hot, so I wouldn't be surprised to see that men's golf team jump up the ranks as well.
Like I said, to call them number 12, you can pick one or two, but not both. You know, that number needs to be divided extremely. But yeah, I like it. I like it. Another dark horse. Men's golf could be in there. Could be our seventh national championship of the spring. Thank you, Brett. This was fun. This was one of my most fun segments because Gerald and I talk about this, and we try to keep tabs, but you actually just crystallize it in a way that makes I feel like I honestly went to a professor, you know, in college that you actually learned something in that class, you know, and you're like, oh, I liked that class. That's how I feel. So if people have listened to all of our podcasts for 6 years and never learned something, I hope today for the first time they actually learned something, because I know I did.
This is intro to Director's Cup. We'll have to come back for the 102 session here later in the spring.
We will absolutely have you back on in May when all this shakes out, and you can tell us just how right you were, Brett. Thank you so much again. You, like I, have small children, so we won't keep you too long, because I know you've got to reset the house and then get some sleep.
You know it all too well. So thanks for having me, guys.
Pleasure was ours. Thanks, man.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
All right, Gerald, now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. I actually love Brett. Given our segue shout-out when he mentioned the burnt orange lenses as he was going, but we are going to ourselves take a look at some items here in the world through burnt orange lenses. Gerald, let's start at the top. I've been waiting to talk about this all week just to put it on record, because obviously it is not official news until it's been on this podcast. Scottie Scheffler became the third Texas men's golf alumni to win the Masters, the vaunted green jacket. There have been many major champions representing the University of Texas. Ben Crenshaw won both the Masters 84 and 95. Tom Kite never won a Masters, but did win the 92 U.S. Open. Mark Brooks won 96 PGA. Justin Leonard, the 97 Open. Spieth, we know, won the Masters in 15. He also won the Open that year, as well as the 2017 Open, and now Scheffler with the 2022 Masters. I did want to give a shout-out to Twitter user Park Presnell, who pointed out, I try to be better than this, but pointed out that I, like all of the golf world, the Texas Twitter world, general Twitter.com world, he was the only one to point out that, no, there are 10 other major champions. Betsy Rawls had 8, and Sherry Steinhauer had 2 on the LPGA. So a one more feather in the cap for the Texas golf totality. But Scotty, just unbelievable. Every round under par, he was the hottest golfer in the world. You figured it would be a silly bet to bet on him, because the Masters always kind of likes to drag the favorite a bit and someone come out of the woodwork. Gerald, did, besides the beautiful bird chirping, the glass-like water reflections, and the zen-like sound of Jim Nantz's voice, and the luscious greens, how excited were you to watch our boy Scotty?
Man, it was fun to watch. I mean, I'm like the most casual of casual golf fans, but you get Tiger Woods back and Scotty Scheffler on a heater. Like, it's, we have to prepare ourselves to live in a world where Scotty Scheffler never loses a golf tournament again. I think when he won the Masters, it was four tournament wins in 57 days or something stupid like that. So, like, there are 2-month-old babies that have never lived in a world where Scottie Scheffler did not win the golf tournament. Like, that's the world in which they live, and I think it's a reality that they need to be prepared for the rest of their days. It's like, Scottie Scheffler will win every golf tournament from here on out until the world collapses in on itself.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, it was no guarantee. He's only the fifth ever golfer to be number one and win, right? And two of those are Tiger. It's such a hard course. There's so much pressure. There's so many eyes on you. You have the patrons. You know, it's jam packed with folks watching. You know, there's just a pressure cooker. Scotty actually said, I believe it was, you know, Sunday morning before the final round, he cried in the morning. Just. He said, you know, the pressure just got to him. He just broke down and cried. It seemed to be cathartic because he did what he needed to do. But, I mean, it was a fun tournament. he was so locked in. There was a couple guys. Rory on Sunday was amazing. Watching Tiger, you know, make the cut and kind of be where he was. And even though Spieth didn't make it and he would have been another fan favorite, there was make the cut. There was just some good golf played, but none as consistent or as high end as Scotty across 4 days. And it was kind of funny when every fan on social media, the announcers, anyone who knew anything or watched any bit of golf was just praising Scotty for basically, you know, a couple bogeys here and there, but a perfect round all the way through. And he's on 18 and it's one. I think he's at that point five, maybe six strokes up. Like, it's just, he can't lose. He four putts on 18, like, just to show that he's human. I jokingly tweeted out that he's so humble that he didn't want to show up the crowd. He wanted them to look a little closer in the history books. But just a perfect weekend for a guy who's on honest to goodness one of the top five heaters in the history of golf. Vijay Singh, Tiger Woods. You know, there's a couple who had a couple runs that might deserve some commentary there, but he's as hot as any golfer's been, and he's 25. I don't think he's slowing down. So just fun. Golf U also confirmed it with our Texas Cowboys historian. Spieth did not join Texas Cowboys. He was about to, but then he left school. So this is the first green jacket for the Texas Cowboys. So I'll claim that one as my own. But yeah, this is fantastic. Gerald, we have one more golf piece of news. Pearson Cootie was named this week to the Fred Haskins Award Spring Watch List. The 16 best golfers in college are nominated at this point, and one will prevail. He's currently number one in the latest PGA Tour University rankings that came out on April 6th, after he came back for one tournament and just crushed the field and set records with the lowest round in school history. So we're feeling good about Pearson Cootie maybe being the next Longhorn at Golf U in the pros next year.
It's wild. We said it on last week's podcast. Like, Pearson Cootie comes back and Texas wins its first two tournaments since the Big 12 match play, which happened to be the last tournament that Pearson Cootie played in. So, like, there's a one-to-one correlation between the Pearson Cooties and Texas winning tournaments. And so we're not shocked by this performance from the golf team. We're not shocked that Pearson is trending up as Texas needs him to.
All the cooties. So if you thought one green jacket and one finalist for an award was nice, how do you like seven, Gerald? Seven.
Come on with it.
Former Longhorn set for the 2022 NBA playoffs. That's LaMarcus Aldridge, Jared Allen, Kevin Durant, Jackson Hayes, Kai Jones, our boy. He's on the playoff roster for the Hornets. Tristan Thompson and our boy, Mr. Shoes himself, PJ Tucker, on playoff rosters. I'm excited for any one of them to make a run. We'll see who gets the deepest. It's like a March Madness within themselves, which I love that we have that many guys, not just in the NBA, but in the playoff hunt. But Gerald, before I go any deeper, did you see Jackson Hayes maybe send Steven Adams into early retirement with a just utterly disrespectful dunk over him earlier this week?
It hurts me personally because I'm actually a Steven Adams fan. He was in, I'm located in Oklahoma City and he played in Oklahoma City for a while. And like, Steven Adams is an incredible human being and like a really hilarious one to boots. Like, it really hurt me personally to see that, but Jackson Hayes absolutely murdered him.
I love Steven Adams and I love that every single thing about that Memphis team that actually just like has fun playing basketball. I love that. But I also love that Kai Jones and Jackson Hayes are putting the NBA and Greg Brown to some extent are putting the NBA on notice that if you are standing in the lane when they have the ball, they may not do a ton of things good, but man, that might be your dunk contest for years to come, especially Hayes and Kai Jones just slamming it all over. Did want to give a shout out. In addition to the seven players, there are two coaches, Matt Hill is an assistant coach with the ninth seed Atlanta Hawks, and Royal Ivy is an assistant coach for the Brooklyn Nets. One more piece of basketball news, Gerald. I guess two sections. Let's start with the men on campus or formerly on campus. Courtney Ramey entered in the transfer portal. He did say he was going to explore the NBA draft options, but also entered the transfer portal, and apparently, according to his dad, in addition to a half dozen or so other offers, he had some big names, including Kentucky, Villanova, Gonzaga, basically all of Wisconsin, basically all the Big 12, and TCU, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, and one that shouldn't surprise anyone, Marquette. Surprised at all that Courtney Ramey is one of the hotter names in the portal?
I mean, Courtney Ramey is probably one of the better defenders that's in the portal. Like, I think a team that's looking for a one-year kind of lockdown defender that needs that role, it makes sense. Well, you and I have said, the guy that Courtney Ramey locked down in two games won most outstanding player for the national championship game. He's the reason why, one of the big reasons why, other than a buckling floorboard, that Kansas managed to win that national championship. And so the only way he could have done better defending, I can't ever say his name correctly, but
Ochai Agbaji.
Yeah, Ochai Agbaji. The only way he could have done better defending Agbaji is to literally bury him underneath Fog Allen Fieldhouse. Like, it's the only way he could have done it better. And so, these teams know, and especially the Big 12 teams, they know what Courtney Ramey can do. And Chaka Smart knows what Courtney Ramey can do, especially on the defensive end of the floor. And so, it makes sense. He is a good player, regardless of what Texas fans feel about his offensive production.
Be interesting because depending on what his NBA comp says and what he needs to work on may determine where he goes. If they say really lean into being a 3-and-D guy, and if we see that you could be picked next year, then yeah, maybe he goes to one of those contenders and becomes the missing piece on a Kentucky or Gonzaga or Villanova, to really be the clamps that shut down all through an NCAA tournament run, right? The best defender on the court and gets drafted off of that. Or do they say, we want to see you as a ball handler? Does he go to a different school to really be the guy? It's interesting to see what will happen next for him. We'll all be watching and we'll be rooting him on after a nice career here on the 40 Acres. And on the women's side of the basketball world, Vic Schaefer's on monster.com, Gerald. Vic Schaefer this is where we should have if you're listening to this and you are an advertiser for one of the ZipRecruiter whatever sites, this is where we would read your ad, basically, because Vic Schaefer is in desperate need of monster.com, Monster, where jobs... No, he's in desperate need of some coaches. Gerald, they will have an entirely new coaching staff for the 2022-23 season for the Texas women's basketball team. And it's not a bad thing, right? These are all symptoms of success. He went out. He's already replaced one head coach at the University of Auburn, who was a longtime assistant for him, and then brought in two new people who both did 1 year in the Vic finishing school and got promotions. Right. We'll start with chronologically. Deanna Jackson Durrett was hired as the head coach of the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Any idea what their mascot is, Gerald?
Kangaroos.
Dang, you're good. The Fightin' Ruse, I believe their last coach just got a Big 12 head coaching job. So it's a set up for success type of program there for DJD. And then April Phillips was hired as the head coach at San Jose State a couple days later. And finally, Calamity McIntyre of the Reba McIntyres was hired as an associate head coach at the University of Illinois, going back to her old boss at Dayton, who she'd worked under Shauna Green, who she'd worked under for a few years after she got the head coaching job at Illinois. So three promotions, but three vacant spots. Schaefer's daughter, Blair, is not a coach on staff. She's on the staff, not one of the three assistant coaches. So it'll be curious if it's internal promotions, if it's goes back to some people he used to coach with. Maybe Texas A&M is a name I've heard, or he goes out and gets the young, hot commodity that might be a head coach in 2 or 3 years, so it'll be very interesting to see where Vic goes. There's a lot of talent on this roster. They were preseason way too early top 25, number 4. So if you're a coach, this might just be where you want to be.
I'm fine with Texas becoming your coronation for your head coaching gig. I'm fine with that. Come to Texas, make a couple of Final Four runs, win a natty, and then go take the Vic Schaefer method and model and build another one of these elsewhere. And it really only becomes a recruiting advantage for Texas, because this guy's so good. Head coach here, head coach here, head coach here, head coach and waiting over there. It's advantageous for Texas for this to happen, and there's nothing wrong with it. It sucks to see them go, and Schaefer's going to be fine. He's well-connected, and I think it's awesome to see all these talented coaches that are going to do big things at their next spots.
Success on all parties. We wish lots of success for Vic and whoever's in that spot, and also for Lauren Ebo. Now, success, Gerald, is something that Texas baseball has done for years, and a couple former players I want to just note here. First of all, absolute success. Taylor Youngman's jersey, his number 26 jersey, to be retired by the Texas baseball program. The two-time All-American and the 2011 Dick Houser Trophy winner. Again, that goes to the best player in college baseball. Is the eighth player to have his jersey retired, joining Scott Bryant, Roger Clemens, Bert Hooten, Brooks Kieschnick, Keith Moreland, Greg Swindell, Houston Street. A lot of those guys in our Mount Rushmore conversation. Some of those guys still call games for the Longhorn Network. But Texas baseball, I mean, they are probably our premier when it comes to coverage, expectation, execution, and history program on the campus, right?
Like right after you and I graduated from college, like I remember like tuning in and seeing him play. Like, this dude is incredible. Like I'm upset that we didn't get to watch him on campus because it's just absolutely just a monster. So it's awesome to see him finally get the recognition he deserves.
A man who just seemed to go out and throw nine innings a night.
Yeah.
Like I think he had that season in 2011. I think he had like six complete games. It was wild. Like just you knew what you were getting out of him. When we talk about Friday night starters, pure power, lock it in, consistency, that's your guy. Another player, though, Gerald, who has grown probably even from his time on the 40 acres, a player who's great at UT, but I'm loving his MLB career. And as they kick off the majors, he was the most memorable, I think, in the league, but certainly of Longhorn alumni. Did you catch the self-proclaimed captain, which he's been calling himself now for 2 years, solidifying it by coming out on opening day in a boat?
Is he actually a team captain, or is this strictly nautical? Like, I need to know. I need a distinction there.
I don't believe they have a captain, or if they do, it's not Belt. But I think they don't have a captain, but he self-proclaimed during the pandemic, proclaimed himself the captain. Then he went on an absolute tear, kind of was the locker room leader by all reports. But the guy is from East Texas, right? Like
yep.
he hosted a fishing tournament in February in Texas. The guy is on the water. It makes sense. He also, in his rookie hazing, I think dressed as a captain and made them dress in the sailor boy short shorts. So it's all in good fun, but it's really grown into like something that is very big for the Giants. But I don't know the backstory exactly about how he got this done, or who put the idea on the table, or who had to approve it, or maybe they snuck it by. But nonetheless, it was on every major news channel. And he went out and backed it up. He came out of the left field wall wearing a captain's hat and threw baseballs and was pulled in a boat. And then they went out and won the game. So they are undefeated when the captain comes out on a boat. So I don't know why you wouldn't do it every year. All right, Gerald. And finally, UT's disc golf team came in second place. The 2022 Collegiate Disc Golf Championships, falling to Missouri and Marion, North Carolina. Unfortunately, these points do not count. This is a club second place. They don't count towards the Director's Cup. But, we have a long history between the Quidditch team, the Quidditch team, the disc golf. I believe the men's baseball club team won a national championship. The men's soccer team has competed. I don't know if they've won, but it's competed for national championships. So the UT club sports scene is also dominant.
I was about to ask for a Quidditch Cup update. I don't think we had it last year due to COVID, but I'm excited to see the latest Quidditch results. I need to find out if my favorite chaser has gotten us another natty.
I'll have to ask you to do your own research, Gerald. let's wrap it up. Gerald, what are you watching on your giant screen? Talk to us about the Godzillatron.
So not a whole lot of new to report up to date on Atlanta, which continues to be one of the funniest shows and one of the smartest shows on TV. Not an easy watch this week, but it was poignant commentary on the current state of affairs. We'll just leave it at that. And I'm just going to go ahead and take the mask off fully. I've been watching a ton of anime lately because it doesn't require me to be like very, like it's all very good and I enjoy it, but it doesn't require like very serious watching and not thinking about it. It's not deep that I need to think about and ponder on. It's like, and there's obviously plot lines to go along with, and I love it. I lived in Japan for 3 years and used to watch it in Japanese when I lived there. And so I still watch it to this day as a 35-year-old man because it's cool stuff to watch when I'm folding laundry. I've got three kids. There's a lot of laundry to fold. So that's been my recent, as of late, I'm also still reading Moon Knight comics because I'm, again, a large child.
Gerald, if you don't want to think too much and want to watch one guy kick another guy, might I suggest to you that Stone Cold Steve Austin was just recently at WrestleMania.
Oh, I saw that.
That's, you know, may not have the nuanced writing of the anime, but beautiful stories nonetheless. No, I kid. If you like watch wrestling, that's awesome. I did for a lot of years. But what I watched this week, was a show that I am very big on. This is one of the most, I thought it would be. I'm the perfect sucker niche target demographic. It's me. I'm who they're looking for. HBO's Winning Time. I talked about it on the podcast that I was excited to watch it. I've now watched and caught up, and it's awesome. Like, it's fun. It has like some stuff. I was a basketball writer for years covering the Spurs, not the Lakers, but I'm a relative NBA historian. There are some things that I didn't really know or remember, or some names that maybe it goes a little deeper and shines a light on some big figures who don't have been lost a little bit to history if you're not just a Lakers fan. But ultimately, it's a show about an incredibly charismatic actor playing Magic Johnson being awesome, John C. Reilly being Jerry Buss, and he's unbelievable in it. There's so many great actors. I mean, Sally Field plays Buss's mom. There is Adrian Brody is Pat Riley, young Pat Riley. The cast is utterly silly at every turn. The writing is fun, and they wink and they joke, and it's not too serious. Like, this show doesn't need to be. It's just like an easy, fun. I can't recommend it highly enough. It is a perfect thing just to, if you're watching those shows you talked about where you have to think, it's a perfect thing to put on the, you know, and cleanse the palate a bit. It's you've been on a diet and you're eating grilled chicken and vegetables. Like, it's a fantastic piece of chocolate cake just to like have on your cheat day. You know, it's amazing.
I'm like, this feels like one that I'm going to want to binge for some reason. It feels like a binger, and so I'm waiting and I just want to consume the whole thing in one sitting. Like, that's what my goal is. And have you heard the story about Adam McKay and Will Ferrell and it ruining their friendship?
Yes, and at first I was like, man, Ferrell would have been fun as Jerry Buss, but no, he made the absolute right decision. John C. Reilly is perfect as Jerry Buss. Like, His like pathos of he can play like a like man child or a dirtbag or a whatever and like make you root for him. Like, Jerry Buss is like, you know, a questionable figure. Like, he was kind of a playboy who wasn't always the best in marriages or relationships or business deals, but like, he bought in and did really leaned the heck in and built the Lakers into what we now know and think of the Lakers, right? It's fun. I was thinking about, as a Spurs fan, Red McCombs of this era and him being kind of responsible, very different, but responsible for the Spurs being in San Antonio and that franchise existing, and just how close all of this was to falling through before Bird and Magic and like making NBA what it is now. Like, there's a joke in one of the early episodes where they talk about it's young Stern, Commissioner Stern, talking about like TV ratings and like, well, we might get golf and like tennis. Like, that was their target. Like, can we pip them in the ratings? You know, that basketball was not kind of the number two sport, right? Football, basketball, I think, is probably the way the ratings shake out today. It was not that, and this is why, this era of basketball. And it's just fun. I mean, it's so far just a fun hang.
You mean to tell me that the guy that did both Gangs of New York and Talladega Nights has range? Is that what you're telling me? That's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Gooder. Trello Show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Best athletic program talk about.